You're listening to The Range, Gardner-Webb University streaming and on-demand radio. Jeff in with you. Joining me in studio, Dr. Elizabeth Amato.
Hello.
From the political science professor here at Gardner-Webb University. Dr. Amato, Elizabeth, she joins us each and every week. We've been talking about the presidential election, and we have decided that once the presidential election is over next week, we'll continue with these podcasts talking about all things politics.
It'll be fun.
Particularly, we'll have a focus on things at that presidential level, but we'll look at other things as well, and it should be fun. So thanks for listening in to these past podcasts, and please keep tuning in. But the election's not here yet. This is the last podcast before the election.
This is very exciting.
So a lot to talk about, actually. I remember last week, after the podcast was recorded, we were talking about something is certainly going to happen in this next week that we'll be able to talk about in this podcast.
Things won't remain the same.
They won't. This has been wild.
In that respect,
what we know or what we think we know from past elections, it doesn't apply.
No,
this is a very different.
No, this is a very different game, and that's creating so much uncertainty because political science does not work with absolute laws of physics. It's more of we're basically just guessing based on what's happened in the past, and so much has been upended that it's becoming very hard for us to be able to predict with any certainty kind of how this is going to fall out. And last week things looked like they were stabilizing. There was a little tightening in the polls, but it looked like Hillary Clinton had that comfortable lead and things were just going to plod along until election.
We were even talking about coattails that might
coattails
apply to down ballot races. Yeah. Would the Senate or the House change hands?
Sure.
That sort of thing. What happened in the last week? Because nobody, that's not the conversation.
No, it's amazing. Nobody is talking about the Democrats picking up the Senate anymore. That, to some extent, has fallen away.
Mm-hmm.
It's not impossible, but it is looking less likely that the Democratic Party will pick up the Senate. In part, what happened is last Friday, the FBI, the director of the FBI, sent a very vaguely worded email to Congress saying maybe there is some of Hillary Clinton's classified emails on her aide Uma Abedin's, not actually her computer, but her husband's
estranged
computer.
Husband's
her estranged husband. This is just a great story, isn't
it?
It
is,
right?
Isn't it?
Anthony Weiner, who of course was a former representative, unsuccessfully ran for mayor of New York, and is now under investigation for sexting a 16-year-old girl? 15, 16 girl. I think
from Gaston County.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. That's interesting. So that's interesting.
I mean, it's just layer on layer
here.
But as a part of the Anthony Weiner investigation, apparently they've turned up lots.
Yes, like I think 6,500,000 of Hillary Clinton's potential emails. And of course, the issue here is that Abedin had under oath said that all emails known to her were not any more devices, that all devices had been turned over to the FBI. And suddenly, this computer of her husband's has popped up with Hillary Clinton's classified emails. And the reason why this is curious. Now, I think Abedin is under immunity, but careless handling of emails is just as illegal and wrong as actually intentionally mishandling them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a safeguard so that you can't plead ignorance to some extent.
And it's created a huge political firestorm. On one side, folks are saying, why did the FBI chief do this, or why did he make it public just before the election?
Yeah.
And let's examine that. Why did he make it public right before the election?
I wish I knew. to some extent, if you want to be sympathetic with Comey, he was in a hard place, right? Because what do you do, right? These emails have appeared. Again, as you noted, it was a separate investigation into this, underage sexting that Weiner was doing. What does he do? Does he sit on this? If there was something in those emails, which again, we don't know. We have no idea the content of these emails.
And it takes a long time to go through so many emails.
Right. I mean, we're talking at 6,500,000 emails, right? That takes a while. So we don't know if something is there. and he sat on that information, that would also look bad for him. And of course, if he reveals it now, it's going to be damaging, but he might preserve his reputation, maybe. To some extent, he's not in a good position either way. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling he's going to be looking for a new job in January.
Yeah, that has occurred to me that regardless, if
he's not going to survive this.
If he had not sent a letter to Congress and made it public, and Trump loses, then he would say, well, why was this covered up,
right?
By doing it before he gets the criticism of, you're not supposed to use your office.
Right.
That's the Hatch Act, right? Yeah. Explain the Hatch Act to our listeners. It's the idea of a public official not being able to use their position to influence an election. And so there's been some accusation of that. Now, my understanding is that there's no way he's going to be found guilty on the Hatch Act.
Right.
But there it is, out there being talked about and accused of.
Right, yeah, that he has misused through innuendo and through all these other suggestions. Because, again, it was very, very vaguely worded. He had actually no evidence. And standard FBI protocol is, of course, they're only going to talk once they actually are sure they have evidence. That's why when the FBI makes accusations, you know they're really sitting on something good, as a general rule.
Yeah.
Now, there's been some accusations that, of course, he had, stepped out of protocol throughout this whole Hillary Clinton investigation as well, that even his statements in, I think, back June or July or whatever, were not quite even, within normal protocol as well. It's a very odd situation. And then, of course, Obama has come out. Originally, he said he wasn't going to say anything about this pending investigation. He seems to have backtracked on that. And Obama has criticized the FBI director. And then actually Obama's press secretary has now said, oh, there was no criticism. It's becoming very politically fraught.
Yes.
And the reasons for it is that traditionally, although the president is the, he's the chief law enforcer of the United States, there is some distance between the president and the FBI. Usually there is some slight separation. It is still a political appointment. Obama could fire the FBI director today if he wanted, and there would be no other further procedure. He can just,
But boy, would that create a firestorm.
That would also be, which is one reason why he hasn't, because that would be another huge problem. Mm-hmm. But again, I would expect that if Hillary Clinton wins, he's going to be fighting another job.
So this announcement by the FBI director, Comey, comes out last Friday, and suddenly we see a very tight narrowing of the polls.
Right.
So that we're at a point now that in some of the polls, Donald Trump is ahead.
Yeah, this is extraordinary.
Many of the polls, they are tied. It comes down to the idea of who wins what state and how many electoral votes states have.
Right. We're back at the glories of the Electoral College, everyone's favorite political institution, and I say that with much irony. we're back at, there's about seven, I think, states that are up in the air. One of the really interesting things about this election is that there are more battleground states than usual. Mm-hmm. And Ohio is not one of them.
And Ohio is that state.
Oh, gosh.
They always say, if you want to be president, you must win
Ohio. That's right. So many times. But now, nobody cares. Instead, Florida is still one of them. Mm-hmm. Colorado is considered a battleground, although I do believe that Hillary Clinton has a pretty steady lead there. Wisconsin, I think, is in play. I want to say Iowa is in play. But, of course, actually, one of the big ones, North Carolina. And North Carolina is going to be kind of crucial for winning this election.
And it's very much in play.
It is very much in play. This is the poll numbers are shifting rapidly. This is one reason why, if you're in North Carolina, as I imagine many of our listeners are, the president is coming here. Hillary Clinton is here. I think eventually Donald Trump's going to make his way back to North Carolina as well. I mean, this is where all the big guns have been pulled out, because it is absolutely crucial, especially for Hillary Clinton, to win North Carolina.
So much of this could hinge on Florida as well.
Yes.
And that's back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
I think, don't hold me to this, maybe you've seen, the most recent polls show Donald Trump ahead slightly.
That's what I have seen, that he has a slight narrow and relatively steady. The thing about polls is the numbers can shift. What you're usually looking for is a steady direction. On average, are most polls in favor of a particular candidate over an extended period of time? So he's looking pretty steady in Florida. That's why North Carolina is so dodgy, because too many of the polls keep going back and forth between who's actually in lead. We're basically talking North Carolina is a statistical error, not the state. The polls.
The polls. It's all within that margin of error that we talked about.
Margin of error, right. So because it's just too close to call.
Right. It's kind of interesting. We talk about the polls. Polls, of course, are a snapshot, kind of like right now.
Right.
But millions have voted already.
That's right. I think about 22 million people have already voted. I, in fact, am one of them.
I'm one of them. I have already voted, yes.
I have no more say. It's over for me. Yeah, and this is extraordinary. Early voting is down, and that is causing a lot of worry, actually amongst both parties. Although it has actually been quite interesting. Democrats, as a general rule, encourage early voting. And traditionally, Democratic voters tend to vote more early voting as well. Now, Trump has actually been telling his crowds, because he likes to hold those big rallies, to vote specifically on Election Day. So this has been a very curious dynamic. So part of it is that voters are listening to their preferred candidates. And one reason why Democrats are a little bit concerned is African-American early voting is especially down. African-Americans are one of the most solid early voting groups in the United States. And so to have African-American voters not coming out during early voting doesn't mean that they won't, but it is very worrisome. Somebody in the Hillary Clinton campaign is losing sleep over this. A lot of sleep.
So interesting. As we just said, a week ago, it looked like it was, you know, I think one of the headlines I read was someone in the Clinton campaign said, it's baked in a cake, we've won.
Right, yeah.
They're not saying that this week.
No, they're not.
It's
no,
all
no, no.
So close
no,
again.
No, they're not. You know, to some extent, it's going to come down to really Hispanic voters in various states. This is why Arizona is a state in play. For a while, Hillary Clinton has been attracting a lot of Hispanic voters. In fact, she has attracted more Hispanic voters than President Obama did. So she's probably not going to get as many African-American votes, but she may be able to make up the difference with Hispanics. But even Arizona, which about a week or two ago, people were feeling like, oh, it's going to go Democratic. It's starting to look more red now. The weird thing about it is that these the map is constantly changing in terms of which colors, red or blue, these states are going to go.
Yeah, it would be very interesting. I think people are now beginning to talk about the possibility. You know, we're at that moment. It's so close. You could talk about all kinds of possibilities.
Anytime.
But the possibility that one candidate could take the electoral vote, another candidate could take the popular vote. Go through that scenario.
Right. Well, just to back up a little bit about the Electoral College, of course, the way it works is that candidates are actually competing for votes within a state. What you want to do as a candidate is you want to win the most states, and they have their own specific number of votes. You need 270 to win. There are 538 votes in total. And the issue is that, of course, the electoral votes don't always align with the popular vote.
Right.
Now, historically, there's usually no trouble. As a general rule, the Electoral College is meant and intends to reflect the popular vote. But, you know, in these close calls, it can be off. And yeah, this is actually something people are starting to talk about right now. What is likely to happen, if it does happen, is that Hillary Clinton would lose the electoral vote but win the popular vote. That is becoming the more likely possibility. And the reason for that is that she has increased her vote share in traditionally red states. So, for example, Texas, which is a traditionally red state, Texas is still going to vote Republican. I think that's pretty solid. Everybody knows it. But Texas is going to have more Democratic votes than usual.
Gotcha.
So that's what we mean by Hillary Clinton might win the popular vote but still win the electoral vote. She's getting more votes in traditionally red states, but not enough to actually cause them to flip.
That's fascinating. You know, I'm reminded, of course, of the 2000 election, right, when it came down to recounts and Gore winning the popular vote but losing the electoral
right
vote.
And that was mainly an effect of Ralph Nader, right? That was an issue in which third party candidates had drawn a sufficient number of votes away from the Democratic candidate that caused that upset. So this is what we mean. It's always these odd little quirks that causes the Electoral mm-hmm. College to quite be a little out of balance.
Do we see anything like that in this election where a third party candidate could affect the electoral votes or the balance?
The only, you know, we spoke about this last week, potentially Utah is still kind of an odd state. We still don't know what's kind of going on there. Never usually do. Within states, Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate, his support has really fallen quite considerably.
It has, yes.
And part of that is an effect that the race has tightened.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when races tighten, third-party candidates lose votes.
I see.
Except for in like the year 2000,
right?
Because I actually just said the opposite. The third party candidate carried enough votes. In 2000, there wasn't a high energy campaign at all on either candidates. The average American in the election of 2000 looked at Gore and Bush and was like, shrugged their shoulders. So they were kind of like, well, I'll just vote third party. So there is a different dynamic in play. Because this has become such a hotly contested election, people want their votes to matter more. And in fact, that's one reason why Trump has increased in numbers. His poll numbers have gone up recently. What's happening is he's not persuading any new Democrats to support him. What's happening is Republicans who did not like Trump, and perhaps even some never Trumpers, we don't know, but Republicans who did not like Trump and who are thinking about voting for Hillary Clinton, this last sort of, you know, email scandal, and also even with the information about the healthcare premium
mm-hmm.
raise,
yeah.
to some extent, that's putting enough Republicans, they're going to really hold their noses and pull the lever for Trump.
Right, right.
So that's the cause of his increase in the polls, is enough Republicans are, as Mike Pence pleaded with them, coming home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Fascinating how that's really, you can see it in the poll numbers right here near the end. Part of it also, I think, of the tightening of the polls, not just the server issue again with Uma Abedin's emails,
sure.
but more WikiLeaks.
Yes, these keep happening. My goodness. Ecuador is not cut off Assange's internet again. So these only, or he found another way of doing it. I don't know. But yeah, these WikiLeaks keep coming out. And what we're seeing is that people's worst fears about Hillary Clinton might seem to be confirmed,
right.
to put it mildly. Again, these are not specifically her emails. They're usually Podesta's, still her assistants. But we're also getting various journalists' emails. It's looking like the campaign got fed questions by journalists,
mm-hmm.
which is not standard journalistic practices,
right.
to put it mildly.
Right. The idea being that if there's going to be a debate or the president's going to be, the candidate is going to be interviewed by a news media type. If they've got advance notice of the questions, they'll
right.
be really prepared for the answer.
Right. It's not quite the idea of a real debate.
Right.
You know, it's not quite that idea. You can really then prepare a line by line answer. It's like if your professor gives you the test questions in advance,
right?
I mean,
right.
it's not much of a test.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so there's been a lot of concerns by that. In fact, CNN has let go Donna Brazile. Of
mm-hmm.
course, that wasn't her main job anyway.
Right.
But there have been these concerns. And that's also been another contributing factor for why Republicans are, to some extent, many Republicans have been pushed over the edge that they really do dislike Hillary Clinton
mm-hmm.
more. And what we don't know right now is the impact on the independents. Is that causing independents to vote for Trump? Or is it simply even energizing people to go to the polls?
Right.
And that is actually right now unknown. And we're getting close enough to the election that getting good polling information is going to get harder and harder.
Now, why would that be? Just because people have already voted, or?
In part because good polling takes several days to conduct. So a lot of the polls, I think actually a really good poll is a seven-day poll.
And we don't have seven
days. We don't have seven days. So whatever we've got coming in is actually always a snapshot from about, you know, 4 or so days ago. That's mm-hmm. always what polls are, what the American public was doing 4 days ago or thinking 4 days ago. So we're getting, it's going to be harder to really reflect up until the election. So on Tuesday night, or rather, how about this? Monday night, the day before the election.
Okay.
Any given poll is actually going to reflect what is happening, like, roughly today.
Like right now.
Yeah.
What does the history of polls show us as far as those last day or two of polling? Do they end up being pretty close?
Yeah, they usually do. To be honest, they usually are pretty close. If there are discrepancies, it's usually a polling error. Usually that's what happens, is that we see within the last couple of days, the reflection is usually pretty close. Part of the problem, though, is that some of our battleground states, which are going to be the ones that matter, do not have high quality polls coming out of them in general. And that's in part because there's several reasons. The primary season was really, really long. As we discussed thoroughly, it was going on much longer than normal, which meant people were investing money in polling. And also think about who does polling, universities and newspapers. Newspapers have had their budgets slashed. And also, if they had the money, a lot of them spent more of it earlier in the year. So funds are kind of drawing up to some extent with respect to polling. And also, states like Ohio, which everybody was expecting to be important, isn't. So there's been a lot of high-quality polling in Ohio, but it's not an important
and
state.
And it may not matter.
Right. Yeah. Wisconsin, for example, is turning out to be very interesting, but there's been very little high-quality polling coming out of Wisconsin, simply because nobody was expecting it to be important. I think Wisconsin has gone Democratic for... I don't know, more than my lifespan, you know?
Yeah. Very good. Very good. Interesting stuff. And we are down to that last podcast before the election.
That's exciting stuff. Yeah.
When we talk again, it will be history.
It will be. It'll be over.
Right. Dr. Elizabeth Amato, political science professor here at Gardner-Webb University. If you have any questions for us, just email us at the station, info@wgwg.org.